Gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Painting the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert. Sitting across the table from me is my wife, Bianca Reichert. How are you doing, Bianca?
I am your wife, it's true. And it I'm also the co-host of this podcast.
This is true. And we watched a show together.
Yes, again. As we do.
Yes, actually a continuation of the one we just watched recently, because we're watching more of My Hero Academia.
That was a very long-winded way of saying
it. It was. I realized like halfway through, but I was committed to the sentence, and I was like, I got to get out of this at some point.
Didn't want to jump ship.
And now we're still talking about it. Mm. So it's just we took a long thing that was unnecessarily long, and now it's even longer.
Yeah, well, this show continues to be great.
Yeah.
Very exciting group of episodes that we watched.
I think this might be the best. Like, I loved season one. You loved season one. And then we loved the beginning of season two. And then I just think that this is the best set we've seen yet.
You know, I just want to pat ourselves on the back for having the genius idea of separating these 25 episodes into 5 episodes of Painting the Stream. I mean, who would have thought to do that? And it just so happens that this cluster of five is like the perfect arc because it like covers all the one-on-one battles.
Yeah, I think the first five was really good because it got us through the concept of the games, the UA games, and then we got through the first early things and everything. But this seems like such a big one-on-one fight, quirk-heavy thing that I'm glad we got a big old chunk of episodes dedicated to these.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's I was kind of really waiting for the people to or the hero students to use their powers against each other and see who's better than the others.
And it was doing a great job of, like, at the end of episodes, you'd be like, oh, shit, these two are fighting next? Like that, oh, we got to start the next one right now. Like, and they all paid off. Like, people's quirks playing off each other in fun ways. And I guess let's get down to it.
Let's do it.
So this is episode 6 through 10 of season 2. If you're watching on Hulu, it's 19 through 23. Sorry again about the weird numbering. Blame Hulu. So this is episode 19 here. So it starts out kind of where we left off at the last bunch of episodes. It was Todoroki and Deku were talking in an alley, and Todoroki is starting to wonder if there's some connection between Deku and All Might.
Because their powers are so similar.
Yeah, he's starting to be like, oh, okay, I feel like I've felt this before, or I've seen this before. Mm-hmm. And at one point he says, are you really All Might's secret love child or something?
And All Might also, because All Might is like obviously giving preferential treatment to Deku.
Yeah, so some eyebrows are starting to be raised. And at the same time that this conversation is happening, All Might himself is talking to the number two hero, which we learn Endeavor is the number two hero. Endeavor. That was a weird way. That was a real allow myself to introduce myself there. But Endeavor, the number two hero, the guy who is perpetually on fire and is the dickhead father of Todoroki.
You know, Dan, you and I have been to live shows before, like wrestling events such. And whenever there's pyrotechnics, even if we're very far away from where they are, you still feel the heat coming off of them.
I've been there for many Kane entrances. Yeah.
Can you imagine standing near this guy who's constantly just spewing flames?
If I was All Might, I'm sure it would be okay. Although I wonder if it is like kind of draining his All Might superpower, super big guy time. Because that's limited now, so I hope the fires aren't like cutting into that.
Well, they probably would have said something about that. But just as far as being a citizen of the world...
Yeah.
You know, walking around with that, you have a special suit that somehow lets your fire show.
Yeah, or even being in the crowd during this thing where, like, frequently giant blasts of, like, ice are taking over the entire arena. Mm-hmm. Or just, like, rocks and debris are just kind of flying willy-nilly with no plexiglass or anything like that. Like, this is a dangerous spectator event.
You know what? I was just thinking, how does Endeavor wear clothing at all? Wouldn't it all burn up? And I know, I assume this show is set in Japan, right? And I know sushi is pretty big there. Every time he tried to eat a raw piece of food, it would just cook.
And there's no evidence that he can turn it off, really. Like, Todoroki can decide when he wants to be flamey or icy. But Endeavor, maybe it's just kind of a show-off thing. Maybe he's just constantly like, hey, check this shit out.
Wait a minute. Am I wrong in thinking that in one of the later episodes that we watched, there's flashbacks of when Endeavor and Todoroki were younger?
Oh, you're right, and he is not on fire.
He's not on fire.
He has, like, red hair and stuff, but he is not on fire. So I bet he's, like, he's showing off here. Mm. He knows plenty of people are seeing him. He wants to be seen.
He's wearing
standing
a suit,
around.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, because in the flashbacks, he definitely is not doing that. Which, we'll get to that, because there is, if there's one running theme, I think, throughout these five episodes, it is the character development of Todoroki.
Yes.
Which
definitely
I think
a focus of these.
They make him a major character. I mean, he was a big character before, but, like, he is, like, right up there with the biggest, I think, after this set.
Yeah, all the kids that have, like, really cool powers are definitely getting the spotlight treatment.
Yeah, it's like,
sure.
I don't think we're going to get a five-episode arc about the guy who shoots Scotch tape out of his elbows.
The tape
we'll
hero?
See. Yeah, I could be wrong about the tape hero. But we learn here that, like, Endeavor is kind of obsessed with Todoroki eventually beating All Might.
Right.
Because Endeavor's got some real little brother syndrome, number two stuff going on, where it's like, oh man, I'm not number one, and maybe my kid will beat him. And so we'll get to some of those flashbacks, but we see how, like, Todoroki's entire childhood is wrapped around this idea of his dad being like, you gotta beat All Might.
Yeah. And he sort of suggests it here when he's talking to Deku, but doesn't really get into it. But the main takeaway is that because Deku's power is, like, you know, reminiscent of All Might's, he feels that much more compelled to beat him, to show his father, and not only to beat him, but to do so with just his ice half and not his full ice and fire power.
Yeah, so that's the thing. That's a big theme here, is he wants to show Endeavor that he fully rejects the fire power and that he can do this, you know, just purely with his mother's power, because he, through the flashbacks, we learn he had a good relationship with his mother. Things kind of fell apart at the end, but it seems like he has hated his dad pretty much his entire life.
Mm. You could say it's a song of ice and fire.
You could say that. Somebody should take that. Maybe there's a movie about that. So we go back to Todoroki and Deku, and Todoroki explains quirk marriages to Deku, which I always see the phrase animal husbandry whenever I, like, watch Alex play Civilization or something. Is that, like, animal husbandry, where it's like, oh, we want that dog's ears with this dog's size, or, like, is that what that is? Where it's, like, gene, like, manipulation type stuff?
Isn't it kind of like eugenics?
I don't really know what that is. That's different than the L. Ron Hubbard stuff, right?
Isn't that like the Aryan Nation thing where people just want to breed a bunch of blonde people with
blue
eyes?
Oh, was that like Hitler stuff where he was like obsessed with like...
Isn't it something like that? I don't know. Or just like selective breeding to try to get ideal attributes.
That, I mean, that's what they're talking about with this gene stuff. So like that would make sense to me. Where
so
it's like,
I guess that shows that quirks go from one generation to another, much like a dog's attributes will, so very easily, because you can breed, like, it just takes one generation for
oh, like, super quickly. It doesn't take, like, millions of years and generations and
yeah, and I guess you could just concoct your own special hero if you want to find someone that, let's say my power is I can spontaneously create tomatoes.
Okay.
And then I search out someone who can spontaneously create lettuce, and then we just have a salad baby together.
Okay, yeah. It'd be the half like hair, that. Like half tomato hair, half lettuce hair.
Something like that.
Sure.
Or probably with my luck, it'd be like a tomato schnoz and like a lettuce penis or something like that.
Good lord, all right.
How would that even work?
A lettuce penis? I don't think it would.
It would just bunch up.
Yeah, I don't think that's good news for anyone,
let's
really.
Stop thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like Endeavor is trying to do exactly what you're describing. Not the lettuce penis, but the getting the genes together correctly.
Yeah, so he goes after specifically an ice lady because I guess he thought that would be neat, which it is. I mean,
it's a sweet power.
And it worked out pretty cool because, like, not only does Todoroki have both of these powers, but also he's, like, totally split down the middle.
Yeah,
like
he looks awesome.
Yeah, ice side and a fire side.
Yeah, it's super. It's the whole, like, Batman Two-Face thing, but he's got these sweet superpowers. It says at one point, I thought they said that Endeavor bought his wife's relatives to get to her quirk and create Todoroki.
Mm.
They don't really go into that. I'm not sure what that means, but he clearly was, like, it was not a thing where he, like, happened to meet a nice lady and fall in love. Like, he was, like, aggressively trying to create this child and meet this perfect woman for that.
Maybe familial pressure goes a long way in this society. And, like, if he paid off his her family, they would have, like, forced her into the marriage or something.
Okay.
But I don't remember if they go into it here, but she clearly is very unhappy with what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
That's... To the point where she takes it out on Todoroki.
Yeah, that's, like, I think it might be the last episode of this bunch, but we get a whole bunch of flashbacks intercut throughout the episode where we learn a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, all the 1A girls show up in cheerleader suits
yes.
at some point, and it's because Grape Kid, who his whole arc during these episodes is just he is getting progressively more horny about everything, which we've seen some of that when he was like way into Miss Midnight mm-hmm. in the first set. And here he basically just pranked them by saying, hey, there's a cheer battle later. That's one of the events. Mm-hmm. And they all just believe the creepy kid with grapes for a head. And they show up in cheerleader suits and they're like, hey, what the hell? Like, you lied to us to get us in cheerleader suits?
Yeah, it's an interesting wrinkle to his character. So not only can he spontaneously create these sticky purple balls, but also he just perpetually has an erection, I guess.
I would say, is he definitely the weirdest member of Class 1A?
Yeah.
I think he definitely, like, those are two weird quirks, and he has both, not quirks in the My Hero way, but just, like, character quirks of, oh, I got grapes on my head, and I'm always, always horny and sexually frustrated.
I mean, in the preliminary contest, he showed that his grapes could be useful in, like, one specific context, like slowing people down slightly. But they seem completely useless other than that.
He jumped
and
on
it's
him.
Unclear what they are, too.
Yeah, I'm just going to call him Grape. I know his name's like Minoru or something, but it is unclear. They're like weird clay balls. And he's used them, like, he jumped on them to not slip on the ice. He threw them on the ground to make people stick to it. I feel like in the first season he did a couple things. Oh, didn't he throw them all when they made the whirlpool thing in the dome where Sue created the, like, water tornado?
Yeah.
All the, like, balls stuck all the bad guys together. So, like, on occasion they have, like, kind of been useful, but he's a total weirdo.
Yeah, he's a weird guy. And this episode they introduced the concept of the one-on-one battles, or on-on-on battles, if my notes are to be believed.
Oh.
So whoever wins those, it's like a bracket kind of thing. Then the winners go against each other, and then I guess ultimately there's a winner from that.
Yeah. But before they actually get started, there's some stuff where combatants withdraw from the tournament. First of all, it was the weird penis tail guy.
Oh, who, I hate that guy.
I'm not big on him. I forget his
name.
What
is that giant thing? It's really gross.
It's
it, like,
a big
looks
wiener
like
tail
it's,
with hair on the end.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. It makes me really uncomfortable.
It ain't great.
It has a vein on it. It looks like it's super heavy.
I think it's the vein that, and it's fleshy colored too.
Yeah, I wish it was just like a thinner tail and not so fucking huge. It's like a tree stump size.
Yeah, not a big fan of his tail. But hey, at least he plays by the rules, and he realizes some weird stuff happened because at the end of the cavalry battle, his memory kind of just went blank. And so he was like, I don't feel cool about this. I don't know what happened. I shouldn't keep being in this tournament.
Which is a stupid reason to exclude yourself from this.
But. Yeah, but I could see him just kind of mentally being in a weird spot and just being like, I need to make sure I'm cool here. Like, I don't know. If I could not remember, like, in a sporting event, I guess there's always a chance you, like, hit your noggin and we're a bit hazy. But, I don't know. Another guy does this too and is like, hey, yeah, I kind of had the same thing. I should back out as well. Confusingly, Miss Midnight says that this turns her on. When a couple people withdraw, she's like, oh my God. Oh, and like, she's like doing this weird pose and says something about being turned on, which, again, not sure what her deal is, but she is just all over the place.
I had to look up her quirk if you want me to tell you. So she's a somnambulist.
Okay, is this when there was a point later on where she, like, broke her costume open and that pink mist came out. Is that tied to what you're talking about?
Yeah, she can just make people fall asleep.
Oh, okay.
Which is weird because she's so sexual. So is the implication that she has sex with people while they're sleeping, which is weird?
I don't know. I'm curious to see if they go into that character a little more because
she's kind of just like a dominatrix.
Yeah, totally. That also hosts ceremonies at Olympic Games.
And she has that like weird tacky from Soul Calibur kind of bodysuit where like there's like special pockets for the breasts. So
right.
Each
individual
breast is perfect. She might as well not be wearing clothes.
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen in real life. Like if you're wearing a bodysuit and you have boobs, it's going to like the material will spread out between. You won't get, like, each boob won't be fully defined like that.
Yeah, I can't imagine the material would, like, go in towards your sternum.
No. Yeah. No. Unless it, like, was built that way, which would be weird.
Yeah, that'd be odd. But you see it in video games and apparently anime.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yes. We get some fun, like, Mortal Kombat matchup screens when they're showing the brackets. But before they go into the actual...
Can I just say real quick, I love those matchup screens.
Me too.
My favorite part of WrestleMania when I went with you last year was, like, before the matches, and I don't think the people at home could see this, but there was, like, those kinds of pictures on the big screen where they were, like, looking really badass at each other and, like, posed. It was cool.
Yeah, I'm a huge sucker for those. They had really good ones this year, too, where they were, like, bursting out of the buildings and looking at each other. ever since Mortal Kombat, I've been a huge sucker for a versus screen, you know. And they're all over the place in this bunch of episodes. But before they go into it properly, they do some side games. One of them is a scavenger hunt, and some of the weird things they had to find were back fat and a perverse person, mm-hmm. which the one they find for that is Grape Kid, mm-hmm. of course. And then there's this weird, like, ball rolling game thing. So a couple little fun kind of pre-show, kickoff show things for the fighting tournament. But we learn the rules of the tournament here. So it's just this huge concrete court, mm-hmm. which I love that the weird square guy with a concrete head.
Cementos.
Yeah, he's like the, was that a Pokemon or is that his name?
That's his name.
Oh, that super sounds like mm-hmm. a Pokemon.
It does.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, he's just got that weird Otis from Heavy Machinery smile all the time, or lack thereof. And he's the referee, it seems. And also it's his job to like be like the groundskeeper who like fills the court with
cement
out of his head or something.
Now, this is, and I know we return to this every time we have an episode on My Hero Academia, but my question is it actually cement or is it some kind of organic equivalent
that he
can create?
I'm just going to say cement just so I don't have to think about weird stuff. Let's say it's cement.
All right.
So the three ways to win are you can immobilize your opponent, you can force them out of the ring, mm-hmm. sumo rules, or you can make them cry uncle, basically submission. So it's like last man standing, count out, or submission mm-hmm. are the three rules here. And so, yeah, we kick off the next episode with the first fight here, which is Shinzo. He's the purple-haired guy that showed up in the last bunch of episodes and declared war mm-hmm. on all of Class 1A. And he's against Deku, so we get Deku out there right away. And we learn what Shinzo's quirk is, which is brainwashing.
Right.
Because Deku speaks, and it's a weird thing. It's like if you speak or ask a question or something, that's when he can get into your head and
freeze
you. I
think it's you have to respond to him, and then that's his way of getting in your mind and then being able to manipulate you.
That, unlocks it, right?
Yeah, so that's what he does. And obviously he makes Deku, forces him to walk out of the ring.
Yeah, so you definitely see the whole hypnotized thing on his face and mm-hmm. his eyes get all weird. And he just turns around, and obviously Shinzo's plan is to make him just walk straight out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if Deku's remembering this or people are just talking about it, but the tail guy, Oshiro is apparently his name, I wrote it down here, he was brainwashed.
I prefer Penis Tail Man.
Let's call him Penis Tail Man. That works. It's our podcast. He remembers that, the reason I lost my memory is because I was brainwashed and I came out of it when somebody bumped into me.
Mm-hmm.
And so apparently you can get brainwashed, but it's pretty easy to get jostled from it.
Right.
So Deku does this really cool thing where, first of all, he's walking and he's about to walk out of the ring and he sees these 8 or 9 figures that he says came into his mind,
mm-hmm.
like these weird shadow creatures looking from a doorway on the side of the field. And then he one for alls himself out of the hypnosis by breaking his own fingers, which we think it's him doing it at first. But then we later learn it's those people in his mind that moved his fingers for
right.
him. I thought this was pretty cool, this whole thing. This was a mysterious little wrinkle that I didn't see coming of these are the people that had one for all before.
Yeah, and I guess they're a part of it wherever it goes. They can be, come in and help out.
Yeah, there's a scene later, I think, where Deku's talking to All Might about it. And he's like, oh, wow, yeah, those are the people before mm-hmm. me even. So,
But then he admits that he was, not to Deku, but he admits that he was there.
Oh, is he one of the 8 or 9?
Yeah, because remember Deku's like, oh, one of them looked just like you.
Oh, right, right. I think that's a cool idea that it's this quirk that is passed down from person to person. And mm-hmm. but then all the previous ones are still watching over you. That's a very kind of Star Wars Force type thing that I like a lot.
Yeah.
And so that gets Deku out of it. And he just charges forward and just judo flips the shit out of Shinzo and sends him out of bounds.
Mm-hmm. And I think that even though Shinzo lost, obviously, once Deku broke free, he lost pretty easily. But I still think that that's one of the coolest powers, especially because later in this group of episodes, they kind of reiterate over and over again how the quirks are physical abilities
yeah.
that have limitations and people can get tired and lose stamina or whatever. But something like that obviously is more of a mental manipulation thing, kind of in the same vein as the erasure guy.
Totally.
Where, there is no physical limitation to it. Obviously, there are limitations inherent to if you get jostled or whatever, you could just not speak to him. But if you don't know that, you're going to be completely at his control.
Yeah, if you don't know that, or if it's a situation that I hope we get to, where let's say there's a bigger threat that's threatening the town or the mm-hmm. school and everyone has to work together, I would love to see all these different students with all their different quirks come together and take on an enemy that maybe doesn't know little things about the brainwashing or, that they can
totally.
Take advantage of them.
Yeah, and that also seems like a kind of ability that would be useful in everyday life, you and I, we live in the Upper East Side, and there's a lot of really super rich people around here. I would love to just, like, go to Whole Foods and be like, you buy my groceries for me,
yeah,
you know, and just have my fruit bought for me.
Yeah, like, if you were able to do that, there are no laws on the books that would actually send you to jail for doing that.
I would use my extremely powerful ability to get myself some, you know, some chicken pockets and Honey Smith apples, and,
you know,
or what is it, Honey Crisp.
Yeah, you could do a lot worse things than that.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
We get a flashback, a brief one, to 3 years ago, and we meet Shinzo and this, like, weird classmate lady of his and a couple other people, and it's him talking about how, like, hey, I'm not a bad guy, even though because of my brainwashing quirk, people kind of assume that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes me think they're going to do more development with him, because mm-hmm. we get that flashback, and then as he's, like, leaving the field, like, everyone's, like, really supporting him and stuff, and it seems like he might be in that Todoroki mold of, like, maybe antagonist at times to Deku, but, like, he's not a bad guy, you know?
I think we kind of talked about this a little in our previous podcast about the season, where there are some abilities that definitely skew evil,
yeah,
and some that are more, like, honorable. And I think he's been pigeonholed his whole life because his ability, brainwashing, is kind of an evil, manipulative ability.
Yeah.
But he wants to be a hero nonetheless. And his goal is to get into the hero course. But obviously, he couldn't get into the hero course because his ability isn't a physical one, and he was going up against robots in the test, which they address as why that test is so impractical, because it would essentially bar people with these more mental, you know, manipulative. Yeah. Telepathic kind of abilities from getting into the hero course.
Abilities that should be super useful for, like, you know, heroes and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
so I think that's what he's fighting against. Not that he himself is antagonistic, but that he has this, like, you know, his power has that reputation. People will automatically assume, like, oh, he's going to manipulate me or whatever, when that's not what he wants.
Yeah, and I can't remember if it's here or later, but, like, there's this montage of, well, one of the characters is telling Deku, like, man, you've always had everything in your corner. You've had all these people helping you along. And there's, like, a montage of the last however many episodes of all these people helping Deku out. And then the character, I can't remember if it's Shinzo or Todoroki or who, is just like, no, I've had to do this by myself. And, like, you've had people, you know, with you the mm-hmm. whole, it's not just been you doing this. Mm-hmm. That I thought was really effective.
Yeah, so I'm rooting for him, and I'm curious to learn more about him, and I'm sure he's going to play a role in future episodes.
Yeah, and I don't think they would dedicate this much screen time to him and give him, like, a flashback if he wasn't going to come into play at some mm-hmm. point here. Speaking of people who will not probably get that treatment, as we said, Tape Boy is up next.
Tape Hero.
Tape Hero, Sero, versus Todoroki. And this is a pretty quick one. So Todoroki gets taped up right away and kind of gets swung around, mm-hmm. but then he just fucks everything up and, like, freezes half the entire arena.
Yeah, stadium-sized glacier.
Yeah, like, they show like a wide shot of the stadium, and mm-hmm. it's, like, coming way out of there.
It's really awesome.
I thought it was the coolest thing when he did that, mm-hmm. and it was so cool. And then he just glares at his dad in the crowd, and it's like, oh, man, that's so sweet. Like, I love that.
Yeah, I feel like that was the first display of, like, how incredible his power is. Like, we've seen him use it to get places and,
yeah,
you know, in the preliminary contest and stuff like that, but this was the first display of how, like, huge it is. Like, it isn't just a few icicles. Like, he can summon a stadium-sized glacier.
Yeah, like, in the race and stuff, it was these very specific things, like, oh, I'm gonna make it slippery for people, and mm-hmm. like, oh, it works in these little circumstances, but this was, like, a straight-up fight,
right.
And he clearly has a ton of power.
Right.
So, yeah, great moment for Todoroki.
It was really cool.
Yeah, so Tape Boy's frozen, and half of Miss Midnight is frozen, and so Todoroki wins, mm-hmm. and he kind of goes up and puts his hand on Tape Boy and melts him out, which I guess is not using the fire ability, but he is kind of, like, heating it up just to be
just a little warming.
Yeah.
This next episode, even though it wasn't too important or huge plot-wise, it was one of my favorites of this group, because it was just, like, this episode that had all these other little battles with,
yes.
like, kind of the supporting characters, which is really cool, because we get, like, an example of so many different characters' powers and everything like that.
Yeah, we've talked about how, like, some of our favorite stuff in the show is when they introduce someone's quirks and everything,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like this was kind of like a montage of a bunch of that. So some of these fights, we start with Ibarra Shiozaki,
mm-hmm.
The vine girl. She's got the, like, ivy hair. I think she's really cool.
Yeah.
Against Dinky, the electric guy.
And he's the guy who has a pretty strong ability, but it makes him really dumb when he uses it.
Oh, I forgot about that, because they changed, like, the way they draw his face, don't they, and make him look really dumb afterwards? I forgot about that. Yeah, they explained that in the dome.
So Ibarra like kind of makes herself out to be this, like, kind of Cetrion-esque, like, holy character.
Oh, she's baby facing the crowd so hard.
Yeah, just like
here.
Really, like, you know, right-hand path, like, just wants to be one with the earth and doesn't want to do any wrong.
And spread good in the world.
Yeah, and her ability is really cool because it is really strong, but it is more of a defensive thing than an offensive thing. Like, it is, like, she summons these vines to protect herself and to kind of bind Kaminari to, you know, one spot and make it so he's immobilized completely.
Yeah, it's like he charges up the electricity and shoots it, but she turns around and does like this big Bayonetta hair thing to like block it.
Oh yeah, very Bayonetta-like.
Oh, it's totally, yeah, yeah. With vines, yeah. And like, I don't know if part of her character is like kind of getting guys to fall for her, kind of that Poison Ivy type thing, but dumbass Denki does
that
do the like heart
girl
face.
Poison.
That's not how I heard you singing last
that
time you were singing
sauce is poison.
There we go. That's it. That was a weird bonk. There. So pretty cool showing for Ibarra.
Yeah,
I like
that was
her
awesome.
A lot from what I've seen. Then we got Ida, the kind of uptight class president with the Lego legs.
I love Ida.
Ida's great, and I also love Mei Hatsume, and so two great characters here. And this is actually one of my favorite fights. It's a total like gimmick fight because she gives Ida one of her jetpacks and like acts like it's so it's a fair fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, wait, why does she have a microphone and speakers attached to her? And throughout the fight, she just keeps pulling these things out that she created and is like addressing the camera and the crowd and like naming features and stuff. And it turns out she's just turning her fight into a giant promotion, like advertisement for these products she's made.
Yeah, and she's in the support class, so I think she knows that she doesn't really stand a chance long term, but she wants to use the platform that she has now to advertise all the crazy shit she's made. And the reason she gives Ida that jetpack was so that she can, you know, demonstrate the jetpack.
Yeah, and then like her net gun, her electro shoes, she's got all these different things, and I thought this was just a really funny fight here.
She knows exactly where like the support, gear reps are and like plays right to them. And
yeah.
And then when she's all done, she just gives up by stepping out of the ring.
Yeah.
So Ida wins.
What a great like character moment for her. Like I already liked her from the introduction in the race, and like here it's like, okay, she's super smart and you know, she's a salesman. Then we got Dick Laser Yuga going up against Mina.
Is it a dick laser or a belly
button? It's more of a
belly
button thing because, you know, if it goes for too long, it hurts his tummy. I forgot about that part.
It hurts my tummy.
God, I love how whenever he shows up, he's like the toasty guy in Mortal Kombat. And he just kind of like sticks his head in the screen and something weird happens. He's like, ooh, and like hearts and stuff. I love Yuga. And we haven't really seen much of Mina before this. So she's the pink girl with the horns. And actually,
she's been in the background.
Yeah, what's her power?
She can throw acid at people.
That's right. Yeah. So she throws acid on Yuga's belt and then like uppercuts him. And I think she wins here. I didn't realize the acid was actually her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, because she's done that in like the cavalry battle and stuff like that. That weird like white acid stuff.
Right.
Yeah. During this fight, Grape Kid is just freaking out and sweating about how he wants them to fight like, and I quote, one of those video games where all their clothes get beaten off. So huge Dead or Alive fan, Grape Kid. And he freaks out after the fight.
She kicks high.
Yes, yes. He freaks out after the fight because he goes, I gotta see panties. And I don't think that means he was able to see them. I think it means he needs to see them.
Yeah, he needs that.
Oh my God, he just needs to go into the locker room and just take care of some business or something because he is about to explode. So next up, real short one, we got Tokoyami, the bird guy, which I think we like, and Momo. She's the black haired girl that can create things, and she's pretty cool. Hasn't had a whole lot to do this season, and she kind of jobs out here, so she tries to create a shield and block the dark shadow,
right,
and the like knockback or whatever sends her out of the ring, and she's like super bummed out about it.
Yeah, she underestimates how quick it is and everything.
Yeah, she seems like she was supposed to be one of those like chosen ones who was like recommended to the school, and I think for her to lose so quickly was like, oh man, this sucks.
Yeah, I mean, but her power is neat, but when you compare it to some of these other powers, it's like,
yeah,
you know, okay, you can form a shield, but
yeah, it's not super like flashy or effective compared to like, you know, look at like Todoroki and just like the ice stuff we talked about.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
Yeah.
Next one, this is a funny bit. Kirishima versus Tetsu, the two hard guys. That's their tag team name.
The very redundant powers, they say.
Yeah, so like the one guy, what is it, steel and
Tetsu, steel, and then Kirishima's the rock guy. But they're both just really strong, hard guys.
Yeah.
And it ends in a tie.
Yes, and so they have like a Metal Gear Solid 4 Ocelot fight where they're just like trading punches at the exact same time. And a really funny bit when they show the menu pose, the versus pose, they're both exactly doing the same thing.
Right.
Like, just the humor in the show is
it's
so
just, it's a palette. It was a palette swap, really.
Yeah, yeah. It's Ermac and Rain, basically. Yeah. It's The show is just genuinely so funny, and mm-hmm. not just in the like, oh, isn't this weird anime stuff funny? Like, it's got all that weird anime stuff, but it's also just so hilariously written.
Yeah, it's great.
And we got a tease for the next episode, which is going to be a big one, is Bakugo versus Uraraka, which I think in past episodes of Painting the Stream, we've referred to her as Ochiko. Mm-hmm. It sounds like that's what her family calls her and everything. It seems like that's the more like intimate name for her or whatever.
And we don't know her that well.
So we don't.
We'll call her Uraraka.
Yeah, most of the characters, most of the class call her Uraraka, so we will call her that as well. Kind of a fun thing where she's backstage getting ready, and like I think it's Ida and Deku come back to kind of pep talk her, mm-hmm. and she kind of like finds her confidence and stuff and is like, no, I'm going to do this. And I loved when she turned to Deku and was like, I'll see you in the finals, and gave like kind of a trembly thumbs up where she's like trying to convince herself, like, yeah, I could do this. Like, I really like what they're doing with her here about like, man, I really need to do this for my family.
Right.
So yeah, that's episode 22 here. And Deku is talking about how she needs to make him float by touching him. So she needs to get close enough to Bakugo to make physical contact, and then she can, like, float him out mm-hmm. of the arena.
As far as Deku goes, that's his idea of how she can beat him.
Yeah, that's him in the crowd just kind of, like, trying to figure out how she can do this.
And then at the start of the fight, in the next episode, that seems to be what she's doing. But then, so she just keeps avoiding his attacks as she tries to get close to him. But then it turns out, every time he attacks, she's been getting low.
Yeah.
And in the process, he's been destroying the arena, and she uses that rubble to, like, she floats it up.
Yeah.
And then I guess uses that as a weapon against him.
What a cool thing. Like, the whole time this is happening, I just thought she was, like, blowing it or not able to get close to him. And then when you see all the rocks in the air, it's like, oh, man, that's so clever.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, though, Bakugo just does this giant blast upwards, and it dissipates all the rocks. It knocks Uraraka back, and she passes out. She is KO'd. She loses. And so
I don't understand why she can, like, just clap her hands and all this super heavy rubble can go up in the air, but she can't just do that and make this boy go up in the air.
Maybe it's because she technically touched all that rubble because she was running on it, and so she had made contact with
him. Oh, maybe that's what it is.
And she hasn't touched him at mm-hmm. all. But also, like, what's the statute of limitations there? Like, if she shook his hand a year ago when they met at school, does that count as touching, or does it have to be in the same day or hour? Like, they don't really go into that.
Yeah, but so she gives it her all and just loses because she falls unconscious. She doesn't tap.
Yeah, yeah. It's and then there's kind of this really sweet scene where she talks to her dad on the phone, and, you know, she's very sad, and he's like, hey, no, it's so nice that you would even – it shows that you're so thoughtful that you would even want to do mm-hmm. that. Really good character moment there. And then another thing that just made me laugh a lot is just Concrete Man having to refill the court because all the cement got broken up. It's just like one quick shot. And it's like, oh, man, this poor guy has to fix the whole court after
that. Listen,
that's
why he's there. He knows what he signed up for.
Just every time they show that character, it makes me laugh. What a weird guy. And then we got Endeavor encountering Deku. And he also accuses Deku of being like, hey, what's the deal? You seem like All Might. Seems like you're doing one for all. But he tells him, like, hey, man, beat the shit out of my son.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I need you to test him, give him everything you got, because, like, I mean, conceivably to bring out the fire, but he does not say that to Deku.
Right.
And Deku doesn't really seem to be buying it. Like, I don't think he really gives a shit what Endeavor has to say.
And also, he says in his monologue, he says that, like, Endeavor is, like, one of the people that absolutely cannot find out that he's inherited All Might's power.
Right, right. So I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more Endeavor stuff after mm-hmm. this set of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we're going to see more of the Hanzi kid from season one, because before Todoroki versus Deku, we do see him watching on his monitor again.
Right.
So they keep reminding us, like, hey, this kid's watching. Mm-hmm. We're going to bring him back. But we don't know what the deal is yet.
Real quick, in that episode, Tetsu, and Kirishima have an arm wrestling
yes.
contest to settle the previous tie, and Kirishima wins. But they become good friends.
That's great. Mm-hmm. They should be a tag team together. Mm-hmm. They play off each other well. So in this final episode of the set, this is the one that really goes into a lot of flashback stuff with Todoroki. It starts with him talking to his ice mother, and he's crying. And a lot of these are like little flashes. They're not full scenes. So we see that. Cuts back to the present day. Time to fight. Big time Todoroki versus Deku fight here.
Big time.
Big time. And we get an initial, like, ice rush here. So Todoroki sends the ice at him,
mm-hmm.
and right out of the gate, Deku, one for all, flicks and just breaks his finger.
Right.
Flicking it.
And he realizes he has, like, obviously a limited amount of time so he can do that because he doesn't have an infinite amount of fingers.
Yeah, they're like counting it. Right. And so it's kind of a crazy back and forth where it's like he keeps throwing ice and Deku just keeps using fingers over and over again, just breaking each one. And like so many shots of just like the fingers just like withering and dying and stuff. And like Miss Midnight and like the officials just being like, I don't know if Recovery Girl is going to, like, we need to stop. I mean, that'll be later in the episode, but, like, there's concern across the board that, like, Deku is getting too fucked up here.
And in the midst of all this, we get a lot of flashbacks, and we learn that, essentially, Todoroki's childhood was robbed of him because his father, quote-unquote, created him to be, you know, the person that would take the, what is the word, take the...
The mantle of number one hero?
Yeah, like beat All Might. That's what he wanted to create a son for.
To succeed where he failed, basically.
Yeah, so he doesn't let him hang out with kids. He doesn't let him have fun. He just forces him to train constantly. And his mother, like, throws boiling water at him because she hates his father so much and she hates the fire part of him. So.
Yeah.
So it's pretty sad. He has a pretty tragic upbringing. But nonetheless, he still wants to be a hero. And eventually his mother says, you know... you can be a hero and use both sides of you. You know?
Yeah, like as long as you're true to yourself. Mm-hmm. And that flashback comes at a pretty critical part in this fight. But this is kind of what you were talking about before, how they are describing a lot here about how it's like physical, you know, the quirks or physical abilities and everything. It's like they make an analogy to being like sprinting, where it's like, hey, yeah, if you run a bunch, you're going to be tired. You can't do it. And there are shots of like Deku's pinky, like blood flying out when he flicks. Like this is kind of a brutal fight here, and it's drawn out.
And but Deku notices that Todoroki is like shaking a little too, and that's when he realizes that Todoroki has a limit as well. But at the same time, Deku is encouraging him to use his full power. He wants to see his firepower. You know, if he's going to lose, he wants to lose to someone who is giving it his all.
Yeah, he's like taunting him, saying like, come at me with everything you've got. And like, I think, you know, implying the fire. Mm-hmm. And so they are cutting to Endeavor in the crowd that's clearly just like, come on, just do it, do the fire thing. So Deku is kind of playing into what Endeavor wants, but I think his intentions are also pure and just wanting to have a full real fight with this guy. So yeah, lots of flashbacks here. Were they implying that there was like beatings and stuff going on? They don't straight up show Endeavor hitting people, but there's a lot of crying and stuff happening behind doors.
Well, they show Endeavor like smacking his mom and like pushing her aside.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like a good situation.
Yeah. And like, so that final flashback happens where, Deku gives Todoroki a huge punch. Mm-hmm. Like it's a big one for all punch, even after his fingers are all messed up. And so Todoroki's like flying back. And keeps flashing back to the mother being like, yeah, the stuff you said about the fire. It's okay. Use it. Be true to yourself. And so he uses it. He starts like basically powering up. And this part's awesome. Like the fire is on one side. The ice is on the other. He's like getting ready to use both. Endeavor is like getting super into it and like walking down the stairs to get a closer look. And then it was this incredibly dramatic charge at each other with like Todoroki with the fire and ice. Deku is charging up this giant one for all. But Miss Midnight and Concrete Man, they're worried that they're just going to like kill each other.
Right.
So the last second, like Concrete Man puts up some barriers and stuff. I think this is what I mentioned before about how she like Midnight kind of broke open her thing and sprayed out some sleep fart or whatever. And so the smoke clears because it's not really clear what happens after the charge. And Deku is just standing out of bounds, and he just collapses.
Right.
And so Todoroki wins the whole thing. And that's how we end – another great way to end a set of episodes for this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. It was – I mean, it's – Deku obviously is the main character. And, you know, he says in the beginning of every show that this is a story of how he became the greatest hero or whatever. And then also earlier on, and I think it was in this group of episodes, we learned that he really has only learned to use like 5% of All Might's power.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it doesn't mean just because he lost here that he's not going to at some point be able to beat Todoroki. And I think, too, this kind of builds to a really cool rivalry where it's not necessarily like just the generic, like, I feel like Bakugo versus Deku is so like just typical. One's a really prideful, bratty kid and the other's more like a hero.
Right.
But, you know, I kind of root for Todoroki too, for what he represents and like the history that he wants to overcome and everything. So it's a really intriguing rivalry between those two.
Yeah, what an effective set of episodes, because like, you know, we are kind of conditioned to root for Deku being the main protagonist of the show and everything and just being a really likable, good character.
Yeah.
But throughout the set of episodes, it just makes you feel for Todoroki so much. And this arc is so built around him and his father and his mother and his abilities.
Yeah.
And you know what? This whole series, I'm sure, you know, Deku is going to continue to be the main star. But we don't need him to win every fight, you know? Like, mm-hmm. it's really cool that it's not just, like, him constantly winning.
Totally.
You know, sometimes he just loses or gets his ass kicked or whatever and gives someone like Todoroki a chance to shine. Put him over, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah. That's another way where this show kind of defies expectations of anime, because it's not 100% focused on this one kid. He doesn't win every battle. He loses. He stumbles, you know? He's shown himself to be weak. And there are rivals who aren't completely evil, you know?
Yeah.
They have, you know, different motivations and everything. So it's really, it's, I don't want to say it's anchored in reality, but there's more like gray in it. It's not just black and white, which I appreciate.
There is. And like, you know, as much as I love Dragon Ball Z from my time watching that, like, they tried to do some of that stuff with, like, you know, Vegeta starting out as like a supervillain and mm-hmm. becoming kind of an anti-hero, or like, you know, Piccolo and some people from the original Dragon Ball eventually turning into good guys. But when they turn, they kind of just are good guys. Like, right. Piccolo is positioned as a villain at the beginning, but for most of Dragon Ball Z, Piccolo is just a straight up good dude.
Mm-hmm.
And like, here it just seems like there is a lot of nuance to these characters. Totally. Here, and you're right about it defying like formulas, because again, love Dragon Ball Z. But it's a whole lot of, like, here's the super-duper most powerful thing in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, something bad happens to Goku. He has to go away for a while. How is anyone ever going to beat this thing? Oh, there's another form. There's another form. And then eventually Goku comes back. Someone beats the bad guy. You know?
Right.
This feels like just plot-wise and who wins and loses and stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. I feel it, like it's unpredictable in yeah. a way that Dragon Ball
And it makes
not.
It a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I just can't wait to keep watching this show.
Same.
I'm so glad that we have a lot of season two left, and we've got all of season three, mm-hmm. and then we'll find out if they're still airing the show and everything. But I just could not be more on board and continue to like it even more.
Totally.
So yeah, we will definitely continue with My Hero Academia.
Oh, for sure.
So that'll leave us with, you know, thanking everyone. If you participate
Thank
through
you,
our
everyone.
Listener support program, thank you so much for helping us out at $1, $5, or $10 a month. You did that
Schmackish.
By going to paintingthestream.com, and you clicked support this podcast, the anchor feature that lets you help us keep the lights on at Painting the Stream. And every time somebody comes in and we get a new supporter, we present them with a bonku, which is a custom haiku written by host Bonk.
That's me.
Right next to me.
Now, Dan, I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, this is a weekly podcast.
That's true.
And sometimes we get an influx of supporters, and they might not have their Bonku yet, but that
yes.
doesn't mean that I forgot about them. I have a running list of all the supporters.
You have a spreadsheet.
I have a spreadsheet, and I assure you, if you this isn't your week, if it isn't your Bonku today, it will be at some point in the near future. So, you know, chin up.
Yeah.
Keep on keeping on, keep trucking in the immortal words of R. Crumb.
Yes. And it is not a, it's not like a waiting list of like 50 people. Like, you're not going to have to wait a year for your Bonku. It's just, might be a few episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
But we will get to you.
All right. So this week, I wrote a Bonku for David. Now, David was kind enough to go to paintingthestream.com, take time out of his day and money out of his wallet to support this podcast, and from the bottom of our hearts, David, I just want to say thanks.
Thank you, David.
Here's your Bonku. Take these broken wings. Learn to fly again, David. Learn to live so free.
Whoa. That's good.
Well, Mister.
Yeah,
for people
a little
at home.
Bit. Makes me think of great love scenes in cinema history. So, yes.
Wow.
Wow part. Kills me every time.
A shot too.
Let me do the talking. Anywho, if you have any recommendations or suggestions or anything, you can email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com. You can follow us at PanTheStream on Twitter, and that'll let you know what we're watching for the next week if you would like to watch along with us. If you're on the iTunes there, if you could drop in and give us a 5-star review, say you're enjoying Painting the Stream, please do that. That'd be a nice help to us. And
That'd
we hope
be really
you're,
cool.
Yeah, we hope you're enjoying the show. And as we like to do at the end of episodes, we will give out some suggestions to you. So, Bonk, is there anything that has been in your life lately that you would like to suggest to folks to try themselves?
Well, it's a simple concept. Just get your dog groomed. We got Razor groomed for the first time this past weekend, and he looks ravishing in his
yes.
new summer cut. He looks like a very spry little doggo. He has those cavalier floppy paws usually, but we could finally see his paws now, and they're so little. And he seemed to have taken a liking to it as well, because I've never seen him clean himself so relentlessly.
He's been finding things that I think he thought was he looks once ashamed lost. That,
oh, wait, can I just tell real quick? The other day we were watching something on TV, I forgot, but Razor was sleeping between us. And he was snoring in the most funny way.
It was a cartoon dog.
It was, I'm not exaggerating, it was just like, It was like a human humming. It was amazing. It was so cute.
And as you're doing that, his head was tilting back and forth on the floor next to us. And yeah, he is just a cartoon dog. He's adorable. My suggestion also revolves around Razor and dogs. So this is like, if you YouTube or look up any dog training tips or guides, mm-hmm. most people will bring up a clicker. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing that you can associate, like, oh, if you're teaching a dog
Adventure
to sit
capitalist.
Or something. Oh. What? Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. Cookie clicker, yes. So it's a way of just, like, making your dog associate good behavior with getting a treat and, you know, reinforcing the behavior and all that stuff. So, for example, Razor is being a real good boy right now, laying right on the floor. And I think part of that might be because I have started clicking at the end of podcasts when he has been a good boy and he gets a little treat afterwards. I think he knows that might be coming soon. So just in the short time I've been using this clicker, I can tell he is taken to it. So if you want to train your dog, do some tricks or maybe just behave a little more, look up some like clicker training videos and get, you know, you can get like a 2-pack for like $6 on Amazon. Mm. That's what I did. And it's a real nice thing.
Yeah, good tip.
Yes. So that'll be it for this week on Painting the Stream. We will definitely, definitely be back covering My Hero Academia episodes 11 through 15. Mm-hmm. And keep an eye out for that. Follow us at Pan the Stream to see when that episode is going up. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thank you, Tom. That's my brother. Thank you, Scientist. New album, Terraformer, comes out June 14th.
Yep. And thank you, Bonkford, for joining me as you do each and every week.
Thank you, Donkle.
Here on Painting the Stream.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.